Welcome in, Loons fans, to another edition of the Match Day Preview. Jonathan Harrison here, joined once again by Chief Development Officer Manny Lagos. Manny, busy, busy week for the Loons yet again. Let's jump right into this. One of the best performances from the team that I've seen in a very long time against LAFC. That's kind of my overarching thought of that match. We'll dive into it a little bit more, but that's my overarching thought to begin this podcast.
I love it. It's a great start because it was a special night. And, you know, I think we keep on talking about special moments at the stadium. And so far this year, we've had two, I think, outstanding games, two games that I think really showed an attitude of, you know, trying to course correct maybe the challenges we had at home last year in terms of giving up late goals versus scoring late goals. And then obviously this game closing the game out. So it was a really, just a great 90 minutes. A lot of guys contributed in a lot of different ways. The subs came on and were important. We had a lot of health or players that were trying to get healthy that got minutes and contributed. So yeah, it was a really, really good night for the team.
Absolutely. That's our teaser for the longer discussion of that match. But let's look across the league here to start off the show. And there's plenty to discuss. The Loons on top of the West at 10 points, which I think if you're telling Loons fans before the season started with everything that we talked about in the first show of the season, that you'd have 10 points after the first four games, considering the opponents, they'd run to the bank with those 10 points as fast as they could.
Yeah, I would even have to argue probably the toughest schedule of any team in the league for the first four games. I could be wrong, but my view says like we played some pretty darn good teams and, you know, came away with results. So really, really an impressive start to the season. And really, I think one of the themes was I thought there was some great work in the preseason, the extension of the work that Cam and his staff did. And then obviously Eric coming on board and having it be his first game and just having him work with the guys for the week with the staff and you know, just you don't want to over kind of like think about his first game. But you also get excited when you see the way the guys played for the club and played for him based on, you know, trying to keep that continuity of how we started the season and really making sure we got off the field with 3 points at home. Felt like there was a hunger and energy by everybody to make that happen for Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Across the league, there's two other teams on 10 points, Miami and Columbus. I think a lot of people expected those two teams to be up there in the Eastern Conference. But there are 9 undefeated teams. One of them is kind of funny in how they get there in Philadelphia and just 3 draws for them and no wins yet, but undefeated still. So they'll take that, even though it's a poor start for them considering how they normally play down in 13th place in the Eastern Conference. Crew, Cincinnati, Nashville, and Philadelphia, all the undefeated teams in the Eastern Conference. Minnesota, Vancouver, and Galaxy, St. Louis, and Sporting Kansas City all have 3 draws and just 1 win for them. But those teams are undefeated in the Western Conference. Which of these teams is, I guess, surprises you the most with where they are right now?
Surprises the most is probably Vancouver. Just because I think, you know, my mind goes to just how well they played in Dallas. I mean, that was a really complete 90 minutes for them. I think they really dominated away. We all know how hard it is to get points away in this league in general. Mm-hmm. But to even play that well and dominated team, and I do think Dallas will course correct. I think they you know, will start to navigate their own season challenges. But it certainly for me, the Vancouver team seems like they've grown into the season really well.
Especially with being without their head coach for as long as they'll have to be with him to start this season. I mean, that's something that they have to fight against as well. I think they're one of the most surprising. I want to say Galaxy because of the way the past couple seasons have gone and how it just felt like they were stuck in the mud a little bit, trying to figure their way out. You would trust Greg Vanney to figure it out because of what he did his past in Toronto, but it just felt like things were starting to kind of grind to a halt there. And all of a sudden they've got off to a decent start to start this season. And they look like a much different Galaxy side than we've seen over the past couple of years under Greg Vanney.
They have. I mean, I think the start for them, I put a little asterisk just because of it's about offense still for them, which is awesome. They've added some great offensive pieces, and they look incredibly dangerous. I have to say, it's always been their defensive challenges have been really where they get caught up. And you know, they gave up three goals on the weekend at home, two against Nashville in Nashville, so five in the last two games. So there's still a part of me that thinks they're going to have to think about how they're going to navigate that balance of offense and defense to become a really good dominant team in the West. But it's probably an example of what the West is right now. It is a conference where all the teams, including us, are still trying to figure out and find our identity about how we're going to compete in that conference and kind of hopefully be one of the top teams in the conference.
Absolutely. And on the other end of the spectrum, some of the teams in the winless category this season after the first 5 weeks of the season are a little bit surprising considering how those teams ended 2023. You got Philly, Orlando, New England on the eastern side, Austin, Seattle, San Jose on the western side. The one that surprised me the most is probably Seattle, because you don't expect them, though they've had a ton of injuries already this season. I think they would surprise me the most at being winless through the first, it's only been three games for them, but first 5 weeks of the season, they're still looking for their first win.
Yeah, and they've dropped some points at home. Probably for me, it's San Jose, if I'm being honest. You know, it's not just losing four games, but it's just kind of getting, you know, not really competing the way I think they expected to start the season. So that's probably the one for me. But yeah, certainly Seattle dropping points at home is always raises eyebrows, because they're pretty dominant, particularly against Minnesota, by the way. And so I think it is an interesting one to keep an eye on. Obviously, they've had some players out, their leadership with Lodeiro leaving, and you know, they potentially could be in a transition moment, but they've also been a club that has dealt adversity throughout a year and seemed to course correct pretty well in the past, and they have that in their DNA. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate, slow start.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll quickly jump away from the rest of the league. We've got a compact.
Hey, John, real quick.
Yes.
I do want to bring up Philly, just because that's really our next league opponent. And that's kind of a fascinating one. Like you said, I think they're undefeated, but it also, in a sense, feels like a slow start. They do have the excuse of a CONCACAF Champions Cup play and kind of saying, oh, we had to kind of navigate a lot of different kind of games and environments. So it's a big one for us and for them when we go there to Philly in 10 days here. So it's a massive game, I think, and it's going to be a physical game. I think it's a great challenge for us to kind of end, I think, the stretch of probably, like I mentioned, the tougher schedule to start a season.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think that's one of the more exciting games on the docket that week because of what it means for both sides. Because as you said, Minnesota ending their tough stretch to start the season. Philadelphia, they want to bounce back from a poor start to the season. Only three draws, no wins, no losses. They've really struggled this season. As you said, they've had the CONCACAF Champions Cup action that has taken away, and we've seen how that's impacted teams that have played in that tournament and how they've tended to struggle outside of Miami and Columbus. They've tended to struggle in regular season play in the start of the season. So that's going to be an exciting match. We'll break down more as we get closer to that one. But let's jump right back into this LAFC game that was so exciting, was so fun to watch from the get-go. Minnesota kind of on their back foot a little bit, but then eventually got into it and started kind of laying punches at LAFC, a side that we expected, that a lot of people expected to be one of the better teams in the Western Conference. And Minnesota went toe-to-toe with them in Eric Ramsey's first game as head coach and really took it to them throughout that 90 minutes. And the goal from Robin Lud in the 16th minute started it off pretty well. But that goal by Bonguele Hlongwane in the 88th minute really sealed the deal, was really the dagger for the match. And it was also just a really crowning moment for this team early on in this season.
Yeah, it really was. I think aside from the first 8 to 10 minutes, when I think we were still kind of navigating, I think we talked about, a new back four and Devin coming in who played outstanding. He had a great 90 minutes, probably the first couple minutes of just getting his feet in the ground and kind of really getting ready to battle for 90 minutes. But he certainly stepped up and had an outstanding game. And I just thought we did a great job of doing what we needed to do in terms of really disrupting any type of tempo that LAFC could get into the game. I thought our group was really ready to, you know, dictate the tempo for 90 minutes. And again, it's very rare that you can do that to an LAFC team that really tends to get waves of attacks going. They can tend to get a tempo that really makes it hard for you to get out. It makes a tempo that keeps the ball a lot and a tempo that, you know, has a great pass completion. And I don't have the stats, but my brain tells me that this probably was one of the worst pass completion games probably in the history of LAFC, just from how low, I think it was around low 70s. But that's really rare for them. And I think we should take a lot of pride in terms of our, you know, kind of commitment to disrupting their tempo and then really making sure that we played with a tempo that was appropriate for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you started mentioning it, Devin Podelford. What a game for the young kid, making his first MLS start for the squad. And not an easy task going up against Denny Bawanga and Oliveira, two of the better wingers that we'd expect to see in this league. And a tough task for him, but he stood tall and absolutely did put those guys in his pocket throughout moments in that game and really had his moments. There were some times where those guys got the better of him, but for the most part, he really did a good job of locking down that left-hand side.
Yeah, he really grew into the game. And I love the defensive component of the game just because I felt like we got stronger and stronger, not only collectively, but individually. He and DJ just committed to this 1v1 defending that just felt like, you know, they're in it for 90 minutes that game. They were really ready to defend well, to be in good positions, to, you know, make sure that 1v1 was good. But also when the ball was on the other side of the field, their weak side, they were tucking in. They were in position for box defending. Again, it was a really great individual performance by a lot of people, but it was because of how a lot of those guys grew into the collective defending for 90 minutes.
I think one of the most, the thing that stood out to me and Dan on the call was the physical nature. And we've talked about it a couple times on this podcast, the physical nature of how this team plays this year. It really did seem to get in the heads of LAFC, especially after that first goal went in by Robin Lloyd. It seemed like LAFC weren't handling the physical nature of how Minnesota were playing, the tough tackles, the bodying by Robin Lloyd, by that midfield, by Will Trapp and Hassani Dotson. It seemed like that was really getting to LAFC. And I like that component of this team this year, of not letting teams kind of dictate how the game is going to be played. Minnesota is going to come out and be physical and get in the heads and get in the spaces and not allow the other team any chances to kind of be comfortable on the ball.
Yeah, I just love that you bring that up because I think, and you brought up the guy who I think was my man of the match, Hassani Dotson. I thought this was a world-class performance by him. I thought his physicality, holding the ball, winning the ball, getting all over the field in tough spots, you know, doing a lot of the dirty work. To me, this was his best game since his injury, which is really exciting to see because I think, again, it's never easy to come back from the type of injury he had. It's never easy to get comfortable and start to like be the best version of yourself on the field, which Hassani is a battler. He does bring that physical nature on both sides. Again, even offensively, he had guys bouncing off him to create space and move the ball. So I love how you brought that up because, again, I think Hassani really set the tone about how he was not going to make this an easy night for any guy in LAFC.
Yeah. Another important moment that we got on Saturday night was Emmanuel Reynoso's debut this season. Got to see him for the first time at Allianz Field this season. And it changed how Minnesota played. They went away from that 4-3-3, moved kind of into the typical 4-2-3-1 we've seen in the past. And that changes things for how they play, because obviously they have one less guy in that midfield, especially defensively. We know Reynoso won't get as far back as Robin Lloyd did in that midfield spot. How does that change things, and how does that affect how this team wants to play, especially defensively in those moments where late on in that match, LAFC were trying to push. They weren't very successful at it, but they were trying to push. But you don't have the Robin Lloyd in there late in that match like you did early on.
Yeah, I think I mentioned before, for a lot of reasons, I thought it was a great night for the group and a great night for the club. And I think I mentioned Allianz Field and the fans were once again part of creating that special magic. But the guys in the field and the product, it couldn't have gone better from genuine minutes of guys like Fragapani and then certainly Ray getting his first real minutes. And really, we needed him to have real minutes. So we needed to close that game out. And you're right, I think we defended a little bit deeper, but it just opened up us to counterattack and keep our good shape. So for me, again, that's one of the exciting things about this part of the season now is getting everybody healthy and seeing how we're going to kind of adapt to both how we want to play, but also the players and their own kind of individual attributes to make the team better and win on the field. So there's no doubt. I think it's going to evolve into a way that when Reynoso's on the field, hopefully we are continuing to make sure we're doing the things that are pressing the game and taking it to the other team. But sometimes that might mean defending deeper and then having raised qualities help us get out and help us, you know, have that creative spark to create chances.
I said earlier on that one of the themes early on this season for the Loons is the physical play. One of the secondary themes, if not up there as a primary theme, is the impact substitutions for this squad this season. We've seen that in all the games so far, especially Tani Oluwaseyi coming in and scoring and assisting a couple times already, but Bonhukle Hlongwane coming off the bench, scoring the 88th minute, Oluwaseyi having some impact as well off the bench. What does that do for a squad to know that, hey, I may be starting this game, but the guys coming off the bench, they'll be able to finish this and have a real impact coming on late in the match?
Yeah, I just think it's outstanding for the group to know that, you know, you've got a 90 plus minute game where there's going to be a lot of individuals, whether they start or not, that potentially have to contribute in different ways, you know, offensively and defensively. And, you know, Bongi certainly getting the two goals in the last two games shows the potential of what we can do when we, you know, have a healthy squad and a healthy roster. And certainly Tani's made the most of just being ready and ready to go. So for me, I think the navigation of winning these games in MLS is incredibly hard, and especially when you're playing one of the better teams historically in the league. It takes everybody. It takes the whole group being committed and hungry to contribute. And that mentality just doesn't happen in that game. That happens and has built up over the last couple of weeks, both in the games that we've played already, but also the training and the preparation that the guys have done.
So two home performances, two very good home performances for different reasons, but both against very tough competitions. We know that it wasn't the fortress. Allianz Field wasn't the fortress that we've come to expect out of it last season. But this season, it already feels different for home fans and opposing teams. It already feels a little bit different at Allianz Field this season.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's some great leadership out there right now to really set a tone. Obviously, Will Trapp, another outstanding game. Boxel and Tapias, you know, for my money, are playing as the best tandem in the league right now at center back. So we certainly have some really good qualities to really set a tone of how we're going to go about navigating playing at home and making sure we're limiting other teams from getting good chances. And then we're really doing a good job of moving the ball, of being creative, of really trying to set the tempo. So it's to your point, I think there's some really good leadership within the group right now that is allowing some of our younger guys to get key minutes and key contribution.
Yeah, you mentioned Boxy and Tapias. Those guys really answered the bell after what a lot of people had questions coming out of that Orlando game. Those guys really shut down a potent LAFC attack and really did a good job of stepping up in a moment where there was a lot of questions coming their way after a performance in Orlando a week prior.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Like I said, you know, the debate about man of the match is a real debate this week. I mean, even though I said Asani was mine, I could easily lose the debate about Tapias and Boxel and the performance they put in, because they were just outstanding. They're man-to-man defending, stepping up, you know, really making the 50-50 battles tough on LAFC and winning them. Just happened all game. Like I said, it was really disruptive in a great way. And then you mentioned Robin and Pookie, you know, they
some of their connection play was just, it was,
yeah, and they have some great offensive moments, but they both also put a great shift in defensively. They both really were committed to disrupting as well. And Pookie's hold up play was outstanding. You know, there was key times, particularly in the first half, where we needed to get out. And I just thought he did a great job of not only being strong and physical, but just clever with his touches to make sure we were keeping the ball and getting forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Sungbin Jeong, he's been kind of a guy that's been talked about quite a bit, and his renewed confidence this season that you could see, it's incredibly visible, the renewed confidence that he has in his play this season from what we saw last season. Is that just getting used to the league and being more comfortable in the league, having to take a year to get comfortable in it? Or is there something else about his game that has really developed for you this year?
Well, again, I think it's exciting because he's still at a development age. You know, he's still very young, and he's still growing into who he can be and what he can do. And obviously his attributes in terms of his speed, technically he's great. I feel like he's simplified the moments on the field where he needs to keep the ball for the team, which has allowed moments where he can find space to be really dangerous and get forward. And he's really done a good job of doing that. So when he's on his 1v1 situations, he's hungry. He's excited to show off his speed, his technique. And, you know, he's really helped create some of that vertical attacking that we missed last year. You know, there's always this potential for the ball over the top. When you watch the game, you know, three or four times a half, he's not always getting the ball, but he's making this, you know, diagonal run inside mm-hmm. to try to get him behind. And it just reminds the back four that it's not going to be an easy night, that everything's not going to be in front of you. And so I think he's done a really good job of both simplifying this game, but then also in a complex way, making sure the back four know he's always hungry to get in behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. That was LAFC or Minnesota United 2, LAFC 0. The other note, obviously, Eric Ramsey getting his first win as Minnesota United manager. A great debut for him, gets to do it in front of the home crowd. What does that mean for a head coach to get their first win, especially when it comes at home in front of the Wonderwall?
I can't speak for him. I think as, you know, somebody who's a Minnesotan who, you know, has so much pride in this club and what we're doing, I love all of it because I think we have that pride. We want him to experience it. We want him to experience Wonderwall and get excited about what we're trying to build here in Minnesota United. And he is excited, but to actually have it happen and actually have it be his first game and actually have it be against historically one of the better teams in the league, could have been better. I couldn't be more excited for a Wonderwall. And then you blink and remind yourself, I mean, you probably have the date. It had been a long time since we sang Wonderwall in that stadium. You know, we did finish the season as strong as we liked to last year, and we had a long, long off season. And then combined now, it was for our new head coach. It just all kind of came together in a great way. And again, I think he said it best where because I wanted it to happen sooner rather than later. I wasn't overemphasizing it happened on last Saturday night. But the fact that it did, I think really made it even more special for us as fans and us as a club that he gets to experience that and you know, as in charge in his first game.
Kind of takes some pressure off his shoulders. I mean, there'll always be pressure on the head coach, but kind of takes that pressure off to get that first win right away in your first game. Now you can just focus on, you know, doing all the other little things that you would focus on throughout the week instead of just stressing about getting that win. And that certainly will help. And that was a great debut for the new head coach, Eric Ramsey. A couple other things before we get to our special guest. We had a couple games last night for the Loons. 1-0 win friendly at Allianz Field against St. Patrick's Athletic. Great win there. And then another big win in the U.S. Open Cup for Minnesota United 2. Jordan Adebayo-Smith had himself a night, didn't he, Manny? Three goals in the game, a 3-0 win for the Loons as they move on to the next round of the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah, I mean, let's start the Open Cup game. That was a comprehensive win. You know, it was kind of funny. Both games had kickoff at the exact same time, and so I was kind of watching both games. And I thought we really played well. Great first half, even though it was 0-0. We really set a tone of, hey, we're going to have the waves of attack. We're going to set the tempo. And by halftime, you could really feel like Chicago was really struggling to deal with our just tempo, our pace, our chances we were creating. And the guys took that first 45 minutes, and they just elevated in the second half. And, you know, collectively, before Jordan's goals, you got Cage, Luik, doing some great work to set up him. But then his confidence was great. The finishes were outstanding, you know, especially that second one from Luik. I just loved, you know, his composure and then just the technique to crush the ball was outstanding. It just was a really, really comprehensive performance last night by a lot of young guys. I think we had four academy starters, kids start, and we had four academy kids come in. So it really kind of showed a great depth of our youth system we're trying to build here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's great to see that the academy kids get through and get to play in a big moment, and they shine. They showed their talent. They showed their level of skill in a tough moment for them. And it was absolutely fun to watch that game, as well as the international friendly at Allianz Field last night, having Dan Terra and Kendra De Saint-Aubin on the call. That was fun as well. Both fun games to watch for sure. Manny, you ready for a special guest coming up here?
I'm looking forward to it. Excited.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our special guest, Jimmy Conrad, coming up next here on the Match Day Preview. You don't have to wait for spring training to start playing the beautiful game this year. Minnesota United has a full slate of academy and youth camps scheduled throughout 2024. Show off your skills, take your game to the next level, and enjoy some quality time on the field with MNUFC's licensed academy staff. Visit the camps and combines page on MNUFC.com for more information. Welcome back, Loons fans. And now Manny and myself are joined by a special guest, Jimmy Conrad, former MLS Cup winner, former US Open Cup winner, former Defender of the Year, four-time MLS Best 11 player. Jimmy, how are you doing? And welcome to the podcast, sir.
I'm doing great. Keep that intro going. That was awesome.
U.S. National Team player. Come on, Jonathan.
U.S. National Team player, 2009 MLS Humanitarian of the Year.
Yeah, my mom's the most proud of that one. My mom's really proud of that one. But yeah, I'm excited to be on the show. And obviously, good time to talk about Minnesota United. Off to a great start.
Absolutely. Let's jump into that one. Manny and I just got done talking for half an hour about Minnesota United. Who wants your thoughts from an outside perspective? Minnesota United, 10 points, top of the Western Conference. They've looked impressive from our eyes from the outside. What's been your take on what they've done so far this season?
Well, what can I say? You guys had two games last night. You got your second team in the Open Cup. Yeah, we'll just win 3-0 away from home with a clean sheet. No big deal. Got a friendly against an Irish side. No problem. We'll pick up another win with a clean sheet. I mean, things are going well, I would say, from my perspective on the outside looking in. And what's most impressive is that it's the transition year, right? You're moving on from a coach that has had his fingerprints over the team or on the team for so long. And now you're moving into a new era under Eric Ramsey and Cameron Knowles, I thought, did a good job. I've known Cam for a long time, so excited he got to make the most of his opportunity. And yeah, it's all roses right now for Minnesota United. So there's not much to say other than continued success for the club.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And it's been a fun season so far. Let's jump into the international side, because Minnesota are one of three teams not playing in Major League Soccer this weekend due to the international break. You said you're in Dallas for the CONCACAF Nations League, USA and Jamaica going at it on tonight, I believe, and Mexico and Panama as well. We got doubleheader going on in Nations League semifinals. Let's jump into the US and Jamaica side or game. A strong roster for the US for Greg Berhalter, Pulisic, McKenney, Adams, Robinson, et cetera, all the key players in charge or in tow for tonight. What do we expect from this game? What's the predictions for how this game will play out? Because it's not an easy Jamaica side anymore.
It's not, but Jamaica did well to get past Canada over two legs in the quarterfinals. I should give everybody some context there. They were actually down in Canada in leg two, 2-1, I believe, or goal down in aggregate, and came back and scored three goals in the second half. So to your point, they have some weapons. Unfortunately for Jamaica and their coach, Heimer Hallgrimsson, he is without six of his best players. A couple of guys are out through suspension. Damari Gray, probably being the most notable, plays at Leicester City. Mikel Antonio plays at West Ham, I'm going to put air quotes up for everybody that can't see me, has a thigh injury, didn't make the trip from London here to Dallas. Now, obviously, he's a force, scored against us in the last time we played them in a 1-1 draw, like that thunder blast from like 25 out. So he clearly has a lot to his game, but he's only got one goal in 24 matches for West Ham this season. So in terms of current form, I don't know if we would have seen the best of Mikel Antonio anyway. And then I think another big miss is Shamar Nicholson. He's suspended. He scored two goals against Canada in that second leg and just a difference maker in a lot of different ways. So because they're missing, and Leon Bailey got suspended because he broke curfew last time around. So like their three or four best attacking players are nowhere to be seen. And I think that's very important to bring up because it just makes the U.S. even more of a favorite to go get a result. And now it's more about if we have a starting lineup that reflects us trying to play on the front foot, or if we're trying to be conservative from the beginning. And when I say that is, I know Tyler Adams is back in, he's been out. We haven't seen him actually play for the US since we lost in the round of 16 to the Dutch in the World Cup in 2022. So it's been a while for him to wear the red, white, and blue, but I don't know why we flew him all the way here. If he's still somewhat coming back, I still feel like that's a bit of a risk. Manny knows he's played in, I don't know how many games. Your hammies can only handle so much airline mileage, you know, Manny? So
particularly my body type, especially my
So I don't know if anybody's seen Manny, but he's all legs, you know, his torso is it's kind of average, but his legs are crazy, like go-go gadget legs. So so that was an interesting one. I don't know if we'll see Tyler, but I don't know if he's just here for the vibes, be around the group. And again, as we start to look forward to Copa America, but that'll be interesting to see who plays in midfield for him. Is it Cardoso, who's been very good in Spain for Real Betis since making the move from Brazil? Will we put Gio Reyna in, even though he doesn't play anymore? I think Manny has as many minutes as Gio Reyna does over the last 6 months, you know? So there's all these questions, and I'm kind of curious to see what the starting lineup's going to be. But we are the heavy favorites now, especially with Jamaica having these suspensions and injuries. And I ultimately should have answered this right from the get-go. I'll say 3-0 U.S., and I think we're booking our ticket to the final on Sunday. And hopefully it's against Mexico, because those are always good games.
I like it, Jimmy. Yeah, obviously the Leon Bailey and the Trivian Stewart with the kind of discipline of last, I think they had a curfew issue. And then it really sets up a David versus Goliath with all those injuries, which the only cool thing I could say is that in the past, I don't know if we'd always say it's David versus Goliath. And now it truly is. The expectation is this team is building to compete in Copa America and building to compete in the World Cup. So there's no doubt tonight there's a lot of pressure on us, and probably even more pressure now that those six guys are out, that we should win. And as Jimmy just predicted, we should have a dominant win. So I'll put us at 2-0.
2-0?
No, I'm going to go 4. Let's go 4-0.
4? God, well, that was a big switch from 2-4.
I know. Well, you just got me pumped up about our shutouts last night and how well we're doing it locally here. And now I've got my patriotism comes out. Yeah, 4-0. Yeah.
I will say, Jonathan, I do want to and jump in here and say that the last time we played a Caribbean nation at home was in the Nations League quarterfinals against Trinidad. And it took us a red card and about 65, 70 minutes before we scored our first goal. Now we go on and win 3-0. And it looked like, you know, if you're looking back on it in hindsight, like, oh, we won the game 3-0, whatever. But actually, we struggled for a while. We have a lot of the same players this time around. And if Trinidad actually think had a good job in that first leg, which was they just wanted to get the game to 0-0 and then see if they could make something happen in the second half. They got an early red card in the second half, and that changed the complexion of everything. But I could see Jamaica doing something similar, just being hard to break down. It's not going to be aesthetically pleasing, I think, for everybody that's going to be watching the game, unless we score an early goal. Because if we score an early goal, then they're going to have to stretch themselves out a little bit, and then maybe we can tag them. And also, this is a one-off game, right? It's not like it's two legs, whereas right. You know, if Trinidad had a second leg, which they ended up winning, by the way, 2-1. And Sergiño Dest, just to remind everybody, got a red card in that game for losing his mind. And so we won't be with Sergiño Dest tonight. He will be available for Sunday. So that'll be interesting to see what Greg Berhalter does and the coaching staff does in that position as well.
I will point out quickly here, Jimmy, you're already having a positive influence on the podcast. Over the first couple of weeks, I've struggled to get Manny to make predictions, and already he's coming out with 4-0 predictions for the U.S. tonight. So
I love that. I love that.
Very good. One of the areas I'm intrigued is the goalkeeping position tonight. You know, obviously, on paper, I love it. But at the same time, I think it's an area where over the next, you know, whatever, 12 to 18 months, getting guys playing time, goalies being sharp, who's going to really kind of take the reins there. It's going to be interesting to see. And Jimmy probably has more insight into who's even starting tonight and being calm. It's an important position for the team going into the two major competitions over the next 2 years, that we just have guys that believe in themselves and that are ready to kind of represent the national team. So do you think Matt Turner will be starting tonight, Jimmy?
I do. I think Matt Turner will be the number one. Ethan Horvath has left Nottingham Forest behind Matt Turner and gone to Cardiff City and has done quite well. I mean, the last game or two, I think they didn't get a result, but prior to that, they were on a 5-game unbeaten streak, and he's helping Cardiff kind of be relevant again in the championship. And he's got an incredible track record of helping teams get promoted from the championship. So yeah, I'm curious as to, because he had Forest 2 years ago. He had Luton Town this past year. So he could be a viable option for us, but I still think Matt Turner is probably a better shot stopper and slightly better with his feet than Ethan. So yeah, I agree with you, though, Manny. I think you speak to a bigger issue with the national team, which is playing time in general. Yeah, we have guys playing at big clubs, but if they're not playing, and Matt Turner's a good example, then how sharp can they be? How much can we trust them if they haven't had that type of pressure regularly, right? You need to be into those competitive environments. And those guys know that. But when I look at Timo Weah, he hasn't been playing much for Juventus. Yunus Musa started off playing a lot of games for AC Milan, not as many minutes this time around. These are guys that are going to be starting for us. And if they can't, you know, get the regular shifts for their club teams, that becomes a bit of a concern all the way around for our team. I mean, Tim Ream, I think, is going to start tonight as well at center back. He hasn't sniffed the field for Fulham in a couple weeks, you know, and even then he only got like one game and he was on the bench prior to that. So it's interesting times for a few of our players and how that impacts our national team.
Yeah. You mentioned the playing time issue that's come up with a lot of these guys. Gio Reyna, another one of those guys.
That's a great one. Yeah.
Hasn't had a lot of playing time since he joined Nottingham Forest at the end of January. What do we expect from him and how he fits into this squad, or if we see him at all tonight?
You know, to be honest, That's a tricky one, Gio Reyna. Obviously, there's no denying his talent. When he's on, he's probably one of our best players, if not our best player, especially in terms of breaking teams down. He's so good in 1v1 situations, got great vision, can make the final pass, can also be there to finish off chances as well. And he demonstrated that against Trinidad in first leg of the quarterfinals. He had a very nice goal, a nice combination play with some of the other players. So I think he's one of those, the connective tissue, right, between the midfield into the attack. If he can play the number 10, last time we played the Nations League semifinals, it was Mexico, and he was awesome. You know, he was really driving the game and made some good big time plays. And ultimately, I think he got an assist to Balogun. Maybe that was in the final against Canada, but he was very influential. And he didn't have a lot of minutes coming into that one either. So I'm curious to see if Greg starts him tonight, kind of using that as precedent that, hey, you know, he hasn't played much before, but when he wears the red, white, and blue, he comes alive. So it's really interesting to see, are we going to use this to get Gio's confidence going again? Are we going to use these two games? Or are we going to play somebody like Malik Tillman, who is playing very well for PSV Eindhoven, not only domestically in the Eredivisie in Holland, but also in the Champions League? Thought he was very good against Borussia Dortmund over two legs, created a lot of chances, didn't score all those chances, but created quite a few. And I actually think he's in better form. So I'd like to see more of Malik Tillman tonight, but who knows? I don't know which way Greg's going to go in that particular area of the field, but I assume we will see him at some point. So if he doesn't start, I could see him coming on with about 30 minutes left to go to work some of his Gio magic.
Yeah. I love the comments, Jim. And I love the debate right now we're having, because I think it just shows the strength and the growth of our national team, that we got guys playing at some great clubs around the world that have to battle week in, week out for minutes. And I think for some people don't realize, you don't just sign for a club and then that's it. You've got another mountain to climb, and you got to get those minutes. And then ultimately, I also kind of want to put this back on our national team staff. We you know, hire a staff to navigate and manage these players and manage big decisions about, should I play the better player on paper or should I play the player who's been playing a lot lately? And again, I don't think there's one or right answer there. I think Jimmy kind of alluded to the reality that part of this is these games right now in the moment, but part of this is building up for this summer competition and ultimately him hopefully building up a group for the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think I'll jump in really quick too on the back end of that and say that I know that there's different standards for different players. Right. Every coach is going to manage that different. You know, your star player, you might have to baby a little bit more than the one that doesn't need as much of that, you know, affirmation, a verbal affirmation about, hey, you're doing great or whatever it may be. And some star players don't need that. But what's interesting is that we initially left Brendan Aaronson off the team, and he's always kind of been a part of Greg's call-ups. And I think the reason was because you're not playing a lot. But if you use that as your standard, you could also say the same thing about Gio Reyna. And listen, I think Gio is a better player than Brendan. I think even Brendan would probably say that Gio's better player than me. But what kind of got, that's where, to Manny's point, you got to be thoughtful about as a coaching staff about what kind of precedent you're setting for one set of players and how that might not be being used for others. And that could impact the culture and identity of your team a little bit. So that's why they get paid the big bucks, right? They got to be able to manage that. But if I was Brendan Aaronson and I saw, if you're telling me that I'm not playing a lot, I'd be like, well, then why is Gio getting called in? You know, if I was a player, that'd be the first thing I thought about. That's some, you know, sorry if I cussed on your podcast, but that's how I would feel. That'd be my raw emotion on that. And so now, and obviously there's plenty of reasons as to why Gio would get called in over Brendan, and they have a different player profile and can provide different things. But yeah, that's just something you have to be thoughtful about when you're a coaching staff making those types of decisions.
Yeah,
I think one of the other big questions surrounding this team, as it always seems to be over the past couple of years, the forward position. Who do we expect to play up there? Because Fuller and Balogun hasn't had the greatest run at Monaco this season. Ricardo Pepi's had his moments. Who do we expect to start for Greg Berhalter in the U.S. tonight?
Yeah, I think Balogun is going to be the guy ultimately. Pound for pound, he's our most talented. To your point, though, Jonathan, I think that he hasn't been sharp lately. He actually hasn't been starting. For Monaco, they've elected to go with Wissam Ben Yedder in that number nine spot, who is the captain, so I get that. Kind of similar to what happens at PSV with Luke de Jong, who starts over Ricardo Pepi. What's interesting about Pepi is that he's doing an excellent job of being a super sub for PSV. He's coming in, scoring goals, and I think that's what Greg sees him as. All right, cool. We got a super sub on our hands that knows how to handle that type of role. And I'm sure that's just driving Ricardo Pepi crazy that that's how he's being pigeonholed at the moment. But he's just has to bide his time. There could be an opportunity tonight in particular if we're having a tough time breaking down Jamaica to go up with two up top. We saw that against Trinidad, and that's ultimately when we unlocked Trinidad, when obviously we had the man advantage at that point. But when we went with two strikers, it started to create different pockets of space that Gio and others could take advantage of, and we scored a couple goals, Ricardo in particular. So I could see that being a possibility as a solution if we're having a tough time breaking down Jamaica tonight. But I don't think we see Ricardo Pepi start. I think that Balogun continues to need more repetitions with Pulisic and Weah and others. And it would be really it'd be really surprising, actually, if we didn't see him get the nod. I'm disappointed that Josh Sargent got hurt. He has been on fire for Norwich in the championship. He's got like 8 or 9 goals in his last 8 or 9 games or something. It's crazy how consistently he's scoring and finding himself in good spots. I don't know if we would have started him up top. He could also play out wide and come inside. You know, I think to your point, and I think what we're not saying, but I'll say it right now, is that we've got an incredible amount of depth, and it gives us a lot of different ways to play and a lot of different ways to attack different teams based on what they're presenting to us, the issues that they're presenting. So these are amazing problems to have, and maybe we didn't have the luxury of this in the past. So it's very cool to have these types of conversations. But ultimately, yeah, I think that Flo Balogun's going to start.
Yeah, I like that, Jimmy. I it's funny because I think the debate shifted from a little bit of like, what are we going to do at 9 to like, what are the options we're going to take and what's the debate of who's going to play and not play or who's injured or not. And again, my brain is still going to this cycle of building the Copa America and building the World Cup. And you brought up Sargent, and that just gets you excited. I think, you know, if you want to debate, a good debate would be Vasquez, I think, should be in this group for this call up. So you search Haji Wright, Pepi, you start to really have some depth here where, again, it allows us to maybe ask Greg, you know, how's he managing? What does he believe? And how is he going to even break a team down like Jamaica tonight? You know, to your point, how's it going
to go? To use Vasquez and Haji Wright as examples, who initially both got left off this roster before Haji Wright got called in. Haji Wright, before getting called, 15 goals in all competitions. And then you have Brandon Vasquez, who's got, 6 or 7 goals for Monterrey? I mean, Manny, you and I are, you know, scraping to get into the national team. If we had players or heard of players that were performing at that type of level in the number 9 spot and scoring goals in the championship or in Mexico, I mean, they would be automatic locks to come in. Yes, of course. But now we have the luxury, we're good. We're fine. Yeah. We got more than enough play. It's crazy. It's crazy. And obviously that's a continued evolution of the type of player that we're developing and recruiting. Obviously some of these are dual nationals. But the fact that they want to play for us and represent us and play at a high level is great. So these are all good things. And it's just going to make our player pool that much stronger and that much more competitive, which ultimately will hopefully get us competing, not only to win Nations League, because we're back-to-back champs and trying to go for the three-peat, but also to be viable contenders for Copa America and, of course, the World Cup.
And yeah, I think you mentioned, too, they're all great, different profiles. Pepe's totally different profile than Sargent. Haji Wright, Vasquez. They are all uniquely becoming their own kind of version of the best version of themselves as a number 9. So again, I think they're all really good challenges. But I also just want to bring up for the game tonight, I am extremely disappointed, like Jimmy, about Josh Sargent. You know, he's always one of those kids who's just getting there, and it feels like it's starting to get a rhythm, and then he goes in a goal drought, or he gets there and it just doesn't quite work with the national team. He can't quite get that consistency. So bum for him. But again, I still think he's right in the mix as we build into the next 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to get to the Gold Cup or the Copa America, and its importance here in a second. But first, Mexico-Panama tonight. Mexico obviously reeling a little bit over the past couple of years. What do we expect from them? Are they going to start showing that form that we have come to know from Mexico, or is this still kind of their transition phase?
Good question. I have a lot of my own questions, I would say, about Mexico and their plan going forward. I think when Manny and I were competing with their clubs and even with the national team level, they always had a couple like these special players, you know, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Jared Borghetti. There was always a couple guys you're like, man, these are excellent players, and they're always going to make life difficult for us or whoever they're playing against. And now I feel like they just lack that a little bit. Chucky Lozano, a good player. I don't know if he does it consistently. Can he carry that responsibility consistently? Obviously, the relationship with Carlos Vela and Chicharito kind of flaming out didn't help. And those are two guys, obviously, that are special players. And then the other ones just maybe didn't hit their potential in the same way. And when I look at their center backs, yeah, they don't seem to, I don't know. I'm just not as intimidated by Mexico as maybe as I once was and by their team overall. So Jaime Lozano, their coach, they squeaked by Honduras in the quarterfinals. They needed some late goals in Mexico City to take that into penalties to even get to this point in the semifinals, which would have been pretty tragic for them not to be in the top four, similar to Canada not being in the top four. And I think they're going to have enough to get past Panama tonight. I thought Panama was excellent. They won both legs, home and away, against Costa Rica in the quarterfinals. So there's something about their team that they've got nothing to lose, whereas Mexico, clearly the favorites here and should be. But I think there's some cracks that Panama can potentially take advantage of. The big player that I would watch for Mexico tonight, and I hope he's going to start, is Santi Jimenez, who plays for Feyenoord. He scored a lot of goals in the Eredivisie. He's having a lot of success there, similar to a lot of our Americans at PSV. And I want to see if that can translate to the national team. Sometimes you have those guys that are very good at the club level that can't seem to have that same type of impact at the national team level. And I'm not just saying the one-off goal here and there, but like consistently dangerous, you know, every time they put on their national team shirt. And we could probably talk about a few Americans that the same thing happens to them, but and Manny and I have plenty of players that we've played with or against that have gone through that as well. There's something about putting on, there's a different pressure when you put on your national team shirt. So Santi Jimenez, I think, will be a key. If Mexico is going to go on and win tonight and be competitive in the final, then I think he's going to be one of the big X factors. I mean, if he's on, it's going to be probably good times for Mexico. If he's not and teams can shut him down, I just think it slows down their consistent influence. But man, I just don't know. Manny, you can talk about it too. Like Mexico, when you played against Mexico, dude, it's one or two. You could never get the ball. You're like, I'm chasing shadows, you know? And now I just don't feel like they have those same types of players that are dictating the game in the same way.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Jimmy. I think there's a challenge with their identity right now. I think they're really going through a phase where I think they thought the pipeline was there and it just kind of didn't quite come. And then now we have some players really playing at big clubs around the world that are confident and developing. So there's no doubt, like this Mexico-Panama game, you're looking at a Panamanian team that's trying to create their next generation of a golden generation for Panama. So it's going to be a fascinating game. Obviously, it's going to be a pro-Mexico crowd. But in the past, that crowd combined with the special players Jimmy had said, it's a pretty lock that they're going to win, except for against us in the last decade. Now, I think this is up for grabs tonight. I think there's some Panamanian players that are really good. And Mexico right now is trying to flip a switch and say, oh, we're going to start playing like the Mexican team of the past. And they just can't quite do it. You know, they can't get the tempo going. They can't move the ball defensively. Like you said, they don't have the same organizational kind of values they used to have.
In some ways, Manny, it's their presence, right? They just don't have the same, the aura of Mexico isn't the same. I assume at some point they'll regain that, but for right now they're in a bit of a lull, and I don't know if Jimmy Lozano is the guy, Jimmy Ball, as they call it down in Mexico. I don't know if his style is, it hasn't, honestly, it was pretty lackluster against Honduras in the quarterfinals and tense. And I know when they're playing at home, I think it's almost harder for them because there's so much pressure for them. They aren't expected to just win. They're expected to win with style, right? They're supposed to expect it to win with some flair and they just don't have those flair players anymore. And some at moments you can see that there's some flair, of course. I don't want to completely dismiss their current player pool because they have some talented guys, but for whatever reason, it's just not connecting. And I actually think to Manny's point, you know, we have so many guys that are in our player pool that are playing at big clubs. There's a gap now. Before, I don't know if I could say there was a gap. Yeah, a couple of years, maybe the US was better for a while and then Mexico was better. And it was kind of a back and forth. Now I feel like there's a clear gap and it's going to take Mexico a while, I think, to kind of regain the territory, as it were, in CONCACAF.
Yeah, and it's a big 18 months for them to build up the World Cup to really figure it out. Because again, I think just like us, that'll be the big thing. It's like out of our Canada being put in the pool with us, like these three countries really want to make a huge run in the World Cup. And like right now, I feel like we feel really excited, but we have to put the work in over the next year and a half to do that. I think Mexico really has to really kind of assess how they're going to build the competitive team by 2026.
So quickly, do the U.S. three-peat the CONCACAF Nations League?
Yes. I don't think there's any team that's left that can run with us if we are playing on the front foot if we get a little conservative, or, you know, as that Mike Tyson quote is, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. You know, if a team comes out and tries to punch us in the face, maybe we reel a little bit there. If they can get a goal when we're vulnerable, maybe that puts us under a little bit of different pressure. But I kind of want to see us in every situation. If we go down a goal, cool. I want to see us come back, do something about it, right? Play better and solve problems in the game. And we look back at the round of 16 against the Dutch. They took a couple things away from us, and we just didn't identify what they were giving us and tried to take advantage of that. And so I want our team to continue to have to solve problems so that we're asking more questions than we're having to answer. And I hope that a couple teams do put us under some pressure over this thing. But yeah, I think the U.S. are the favorites in this one.
Yeah, the strength of our roster right now.
We have so much depth, too.
Yeah, we really do. We should, you know, handle these two games. Not easily. There'll be adversity, like Jimmy said, or hopefully we'll see some adversity and see our guys overcome it. But we should definitely be the favorite going into these two games. And hopefully on March 24th, get the result.
So quickly, before we have to wrap up, Copa America coming to the U.S. shores again this summer. Has there ever been a better time to be a soccer fan in the United States than over the next 18 months, 2 years, or with what we're getting here? Copa America, you've got the Club World Cup, you've got the World Cup coming as well. Plenty of high-level action, MLS on the rise. You got Leagues Cup, you got U.S. Open Cup, you got all these great tournaments coming to our shores. Has there ever been a better time to be a soccer fan in this country?
Well, I think everybody listening has picked up on that. I like really long answers. I get really long. I'm going to say no on this one, John, just a straight no. This is the best time to be a soccer fan in this country. The next two and a half, 3 years, get the Women's World Cup in 27. Even if it's not on U.S. shores, it's still going to be fun to watch as the women's game continues to improve and improve. It's great. But yeah, it's exciting times.
Throw in, Jimmy, 2028 Olympics, L.A.
That's right. And the FIFA Club World Cup coming to America in 25. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Like you said, and then in the MLS world, obviously the league itself combined with Leagues Cup, combined with just all of these other events, I don't think it's a better place to be a fan. And you know, one of the things I always say too, I don't think it's a better time to be a young soccer player, whether it's your young friend, your pro career, or if you're a 12-year-old right now, who's dreaming at 18 of signing a professional contract somewhere in the world and somewhere in the US, hopefully for MLS. It's amazing. I mean, to be inspired by all this soccer, these great players, these great events. I'm so excited about the next decade for soccer in the US.
How do we think the US do this time around in Copa America this summer?
I think that Uruguay game, which is the last game we play in our group in the Copa America, is going to determine who gets first or second in the group. And there's no easy games when you get into the knockout round, but to cross over with a Brazil or Colombia, who just happened to be the two friendlies we're going to play before the tournament starts, which is super awesome and random. I don't know why we'd want to do that, but whatever, it's okay. And yeah, those are going to be difficult games. Again, we have a team that can compete. It's just, are we going to be the team that shows up on that day and solves problems and executes, right? In those biggest games against the biggest teams, you only get a handful of chances. So are you going to take that chance when it comes? And then defensively, are we compact enough to, like, I'm getting soccer nerdy on you. And I'm back to my long answers. But I would say I'm hopeful we can get to the semifinal. The longer run we have, and this happens even if the World Cup or Copa America is not on our shores and we're competing in it, the hype for the game here just continues to grow, and the excitement, it just builds on itself, right? It starts to snowball. So having a deep run and a competition that we're hosting is very important, and obviously a nice teaser, a little appetizer for the entree that is the World Cup 2 years later.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of us making a good run just because of this group and putting on that shirt and deciding collectively they're going to battle at home against any team in the world. And I think that's the kind of mentality that Greg's trying to build for the World Cup. It's a great kind of appetizer towards the World Cup in terms of playing high quality competition. So it won't be easy, but again, it's nice to see we have a age level now of guys who are really becoming experienced high level soccer players. And that's exciting because this isn't like 3 or 4 years ago where they were still building into it. They've been through a lot over the last couple of years, and they should be able to handle a lot of different things.
I love that.
High-level clubs.
I love that, Manny. I think it's a great point. Like, how do you have this experience now? Yeah. So that experience should matter. Before you could walk, well, we're young, youngest team in the World Cup. That's kind of the feather in your cap. Okay, now as you start to enter your prime, you have these valuable experiences. Now it needs to pay off into something, getting results, knowing how to manage situations. Game management, in-game management for the coaching. This isn't just for the players too, we should add. This is for the coaches, right? Oh, yeah. The coaching staff's the same. So how are they growing and evolving to make sure that we're better at solving problems? I think that's a big theme in my life. As you can tell, I've brought it up like 18 times.
Seems like you're doing well, Jamie.
You know what? I love talking soccer. So I'm happy to come on the show anytime. Thanks for having me.
Love Absolutely. It. We will hold you to that, particularly as we get closer to Copa America. So that's already, we'll have you back.
I hope that the Loons are still undefeated at that point. So we're continuing to have the same conversation.
Oh, yeah.
One long run.
Yes. We'll have you on every week if that happens.
Sweet.
That would be absolutely incredible. Jimmy, thank you this week for joining us here on Day Preview. Manny, good talking to you again as well. We'll talk to you next week right back here on the same channel. Thank you to the production staff of Kyle Hayward, Grace Dearson, and Evan Entler for putting this all together. And Loons fans, we'll talk to you next week.